Okay, I now turn the recording on. I remember to do that. Okay, so I have Tamara, Candace, Scott, Barbara, Joe, and Don. And did anybody else call in? Okay, well, we'll get started, and maybe some others will join us. Are there any announcements of ongoing activities that people would like to talk about? And some of you went to the NSTA meetings. Is there anything interesting that you'd like to report on from that?
It was very busy. I don't know that I've got any particular climate revelations from it. I mostly attended my own sessions.
Well, one of the things we might think about, although it's very hard because for NSTA you sort of have to put in your proposals well in advance, we might think about that from the Climate Literacy Network. Mm-hmm. Today it sounds like we're going to be addressing a few other meetings, getting ideas for sessions and things.
Yeah, if we do want to do NSTA, it really is, I think it's over 11 months in advance, I think, proposals are due.
Yeah, I know. I realize that usually the proposals are due about 2 weeks after the meeting.
Yeah.
I have a real hard time dealing with that.
Yeah.
I just
mm-hmm.
can't. So, I know it's hard to commit that far in advance, and usually you don't know, it's hard to sort of think about what you're going to present a year from now.
It is very hard.
The other thing that I have a real hard time with is that there is so limited internet access at these meetings where most of what we want to show is on the internet. I mean, a couple of years ago I had a session and actually went to the hotel the day before my talk and arranged to have internet in the room. And it cost me, they said, well, the only way you could do it was they would charge me $200 for the whole day. Of course, my session was 1 hour.
Right.
But I went ahead and did that. But even at that, I was the only, since the teachers didn't use it, I it was a hardwired thing. I was the only one that could use it. I couldn't have the teachers try to do. So I think that the NSTA has to come into the 21st century here. It's very crippling to try to do professional development with teachers around resources that are available online when you can't be online.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that all the other organizations seem to have addressed this, but not NSTA. I don't know why.
I'll say that we're doing a GSA short course, and when they ask us to put in our budget, they give us the sort of expectations for cost, and it's like $750 for an internet connection, which will be sort of corrected when they get the real place from wherever the conference is. But NSTA isn't the only one with moon prices.
Yeah.
For
well, one of the things I found, because I did this once when I was running a professional development program, and we had about 20 teachers, is that if you get one wired connection, you can get a hub that will allow wirelessly 16 other people to hop on. And that actually worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if it was one, but it was only 16. So, you know, if you have a workshop that has more than that. Now, sometimes some of these NSTA events only have 5 or 6 people at them, so that wouldn't be a problem. But it's possible to think about doing that, but then you do have to still pay these ridiculous rates up front for 1 hour of time.
Yep. Tamara, Scott again. Something came up, I think 2 weeks ago or so, something that Don raised, and that's the idea of developing a strategy for handling conferences for part of the network. And I still think it's a really good idea, and you know, it's just this kind of thing is how are we going to present over a year and almost sort of be fairly strategic about what audiences we have or have not met and want to reach, and you know, how do we sort of orchestrate things, you know, develop, I don't know, common slides or however we want to approach that. I still just think it's a really, really good idea, And, you know, here's an example with the NFTA and then also what you want to talk about today, too. So I'll throw that back on to the table again.
Right.
Yeah,
no, I think it's
a...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think we could think about, you know, the meetings that individual members attend and sort of give it a Climate Literacy Network stamp. If you're going to that meeting and can do some kind of climate literacy session and maybe bring in some people who haven't gone to that particular meeting before, that's probably a good thing. And just, you know, being attentive to regional and national meetings and just really trying to come up with a coherent conference approach, which we're talking about at work, too, and really haven't done it there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we put up a branding of sorts.
Huh?
A clean network brand so people would recognize it's us.
Well, actually, that kind of brings up another issue, which I put out in a discussion thread a few weeks ago before I started a lot of traveling, in terms of addressing the now it's becoming more apparent that there is a confusion between the Climate Literacy Network and CLEAN, the Clean Pathway Collection. What I would like to do is there'll be an opportunity next year to apply for the Climate Change Education Partnership Phase 2 funding, and it may be so what I was thinking, it would be really worthwhile to integrate to find a way of integrating Climate Literacy Network and the Clean Pathway and potentially some national coordinating efforts along with some other things to make it seem like a coherent picture. Now, we're not going to know what the solicitation looks like until the fall, but trying to think through how to clarify the distinction between the Climate Literacy Network and CLEAN. And as I described in my discussion thread, I kind of see the Climate Literacy Network as the overarching thing, and the Clean Pathway Collection is a tool within that structure that can be used by lots of different venues. But they have slightly different names, and most people don't. So usually people here use the term CLEAN, and what they're actually meaning is the Climate Literacy Network.
Yeah.
So there is an ongoing confusion about that, that maybe if we do come up with a coherent I like the idea of coming up with a coherent strategy for addressing conferences. You know, up to now, we've basically depended on people having the idea of bringing it up in this venue and discussing it. The best example is the NAAWE meetings, which we've now submitted a second round of coordinated abstracts to. And we're going to have a discussion around two today. Candace wants to talk about a proposal that she's putting into AAAS, a symposium proposal, and getting input from this group. And then, as I said in my email earlier, the discussion around sessions at the AGU, which I'll just let everybody know, I got an email response from Lynn Chambers that said this was exactly the topic yesterday among the tri-agency committee, and they would like to see a set of sessions potentially organized around target audiences or cross-disciplinary connections. So we'll talk about that in a bit, but the idea of coming up with sort of coordinated kind of efforts so that there's a context within we can talk about these various pieces would be really helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, so since we have two discussions that we have on the table today, just wanted to put that out there, that idea again, thinking about maybe we'll schedule a future telecon for talking about the integration of Climate Literacy Network and CLEAN for clarification. But why don't I turn it over to Candace now. And Candace, why don't you describe the symposium proposal that you're putting together and what kind of input that you'd like.
Okay. Well, the overriding purpose of the symposium is to encourage, stimulate, inspire climate change scientists to become more active in outreach, in sharing their knowledge with the general public, and the K-12 education community. When I was at the recent AAAS meeting in March or February, I've been traveling through, can't remember, several of them mentioned that they knew they had important knowledge to share, but they didn't quite know how to go about it. So I thought this would be a good topic to share because that's basically what we do. We're the conduits of information.
So is this symposium for the scientists to give them ideas
Correct.
About how to share?
It's for the scientists. There are other people who attend these meetings, policy specialists, media, and some educators, but it's by and large, the majority of the attendees are research scientists.
Mm-hmm. Would they come to such a... My experience in professional meetings is that scientists tend to avoid the education sessions.
They will come if we have good speaker draws. So I was at an education session at AAAS, and Eugenie Scott was the discussant, the person who pulled it all together. And that meeting was jam-packed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting a scientist who's recognizable by across the disciplines as a name draw, and folks will come.
And get that scientist to talk about outreach?
Yes, exactly.
I see.
So one of the people recommended was David Suzuki.
Yep.
He has an international reputation. I think Don recommended him, and I think that's a good recommendation for several reasons. One, he's not a United States scientist, so that brings a little bit of national diversity into the mix, which is also important for AAAS. They're trying to be more global in their
mm-hmm.
reach. So I think that would help us. Although, by and large, I see a speaking to scientists within our country, but it would be good if we had scientists from that weren't United States citizens, too. So
and what is the structure of this? How long is the symposium?
I'm proposing 3 hours, and this I have the, four parts that I'm proposing. One is, what is climate science, change science literacy? And we can speak to that. And what
mm-hmm.
does it mean to be literate? And then what are the perspectives and attitudes within the United States about climate science? Give some of that data that the Yale Project on Global Climate Change Community.
Yeah, it would be good if we could get Tony or Ed to do that.
Yes, exactly. And then... how do you communicate global climate change? So that would be the third speaker. So why is it critical to get up-to-date, accurate global climate change information out
mm-hmm.
to the education community? And then the next set of two or three speakers would give examples of climate science education and practice. And that would be a mix of a teacher speaking to how important it is to have scientists share their knowledge with her, him, maybe somebody from GLOBE or NASA or NOAA, active scientists who are involved with outreach,
mm-hmm.
talking to the science community. And then after that, the discussion. The discussion
mm-hmm.
pulls it all together. And that's the outline that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So for speakers, just for climate literacy, one name that popped up, of course, was Frank Niepold.
Yeah, that's
but
who
I'm,
I would have suggested.
I'm open to others, and of course, somebody from the Yale Project, Anthony Leshurovitz, of course, was one. I don't know who this Ed is.
Ed Maybach is a co-author. He's at George Mason University, and
okay.
he does a lot of talks on that, too.
Yeah, right. And then for speaker three, I don't have any suggestions. You know, how do we communicate about climate change science? It would be good to have a scientist who would speak to that. And I don't have suggestions yet, specific suggestions for the next set of speakers who would talk about climate science education and practice.
Well, Bruce Lewenstein at Cornell does science communication stuff. He was one of the authors on the NRC report on informal science ed.
That would be a good
possibility. I mean, he's not a climate education specialist, but he's a climate communication or a science communications specialist.
And where is he at?
He's at Cornell.
Okay.
Whereas Susan Joy Hassel was really good. She gave a presentation about how to communicate climate change by scientists at AGU. She's a great communicator. And I think she also presented at the the tri-agency meeting, Shamar, didn't she?
I think so. Can you spell her name?
H-A-S-S-O-L.
Susan Joy Hassel. A-S-S-O-L?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
And
I think
she was.
She's a freelance, but she's worked for IPCC. She's officially done the communication part and written part of the IPCC reports. And she just works as a freelancer with different scientists.
Okay.
I think she has a website at climatecommunication.org. She's here in Boulder.
Having suggested Bruce, I'll say that sounds better. I mean, Bruce is good, but he's a generalist.
Yeah. Okay, so you think Susan sounds better?
Well, she talks to the issue of climate change explicitly, but she talks to scientists about how they can form their message so that it's understood by others, which is what's needed.
How about another thought is, and I don't remember the name, but the name of the book is Don't Be Such a Scientist. Familiar with that? I'll find out in just a second. Don't be such a scientist.
Maybe.
Isn't that Chris Mooney?
Randy Olson.
Randy Olson. Randy Olson, there you go.
Yeah,
which I've not read the book, but I've heard a few interviews with him and read some reviews, and it's on my to-read list.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Okay, so far all of the suggestions are male except one, so we do need some diversity.
Yep.
And, so that's important. Any suggestions for folks who are involved with teaching science, climate science, who are out in the front line?
I can't think of ones on the top of my head, but I've been involved, I have some projects that are involved with teachers in Texas that, these are topics that the project is around, so I just wouldn't be able to come up with ones on the top of my head.
Right. I understand that. So that's something to think about. The more speakers that we have locked in, the more chance the proposal...
When is this proposal due?
April 26th. So we have a month.
Mm-hmm.
So on Monday the 7th, I sent out my draft to the network. Did you get that?
Probably, but I
yeah,
don't
I'll
get it to
send it when
got
I get
it.
Back
okay.
to my office, which will be Friday, the 18th.
Okay, you could also post it as a discussion thread. If you go to the Climate Literacy Network page at the bottom of the so you can click on the discussion tab or menu item on the left, at the bottom you can open a new discussion and you could take your text and put it in there.
Oh, I'll do that. That's great.
And that way then you can just send out a short email with the question and the link.
Great. Excuse me.
Well, I think this is a great project, great proposal.
Thank you.
Susan Burr might have some ideas for the teachers that she has in the IC program.
I can ask her. Sorry, I missed the beginning of this call, so I don't actually know what this workshop is about.
Oh, okay. So Candace is going to be proposing a three-hour workshop at the next AAAS meeting around helping scientists know how to communicate more effectively and engage in outreach and education for climate change issues.
Okay,
and
great.
So she's putting together a series of speakers, so I'll see if I can summarize correctly, Candace, where there would be four sections of this symposium. The first is, what is climate literacy? The second is, what are people's perspectives about climate literacy? And the third one was, how do you communicate climate change and having a scientist who does that? And then the fourth one is the one that I was suggesting that Susan Burr might have an example, is examples of climate change education in action. So a teacher who is involved in teaching about climate change that can speak to how that works in their classroom or in their whatever context that is that they teach.
Okay, I'll ask Susan and send you an email, Candace.
This is Karen Holweg. Susan has a great science teacher in Evergreen, Colorado, who does a tremendous
Cheryl
job.
Cheryl Manning?
Yeah, that's who. Whose voice is that?
That's Anna Gold.
Okay. I thought it sounded like somebody else. Cheryl is really great, and who knows, Susan may have enough money in her budget to fund her trip so that she could actually go and be there.
That's an important point. AAAS will not offset the cost of attending.
Right.
So you have to
have it connected with some project that has travel money, because...
Correct.
Where is this meeting, and when is it?
It's Vancouver, and it will be... in February.
February 2012.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
It's expensive. Yeah.
Yes.
This is Barbara Mann. I'll see Lynn Chambers tomorrow, but we had, Tamara, do you remember at the last PI meeting for the NASA PIs where Bruce Wilecki spoke? He was a climate scientist at Langley.
Mm-hmm.
I know he does a lot of speaking just to informal groups, but he comes from the science end of it. So I'll ask Lynn about him and if she might have any other suggestions about
that's a good idea.
Actual scientists at NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that'd be great. She can either if Candace starts a discussion thread, putting that information in there so it's all in one place would probably be helpful. Then other people will know who's been suggested.
Yeah. I'll do that. I'll have to do it Friday when I get back to my office, but that's when I'll do it.
Okay, great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate all the great ideas.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to move on to the other meeting. This proposal are actually due a little bit sooner, but they don't quite require quite as much coordination. This is for the AGU meeting for next fall. So the meeting is in December in San Francisco, probably the second week of December, if I'm remembering correctly. The proposals are due by April 20th. And in the past few years, I think Susan Burr, Mark McCaffrey and I and assorted other scientists at various times have had proposals in that have been accepted. We've run sessions on climate literacy, climate change education. And so Mark was starting the process, and I sent out in my email the title of the session that he's going to move forward with, which is around, let's see, I wanted to just read it, actually. Integrating climate and energy science and solutions with education and communication and outreach. But I thought that it might be worthwhile having a discussion here, and what this requires is if we identify topics that we would like to organize a session around, and do people need me to describe how we organize a session at AGU? 'Cause that might be helpful.
Yeah, it would help. me.
Okay. All right. So the proposal goes in. The proposal is really on the order of a paragraph long. And you identify the conveners, those people who are going to organize the session. And so I told you the proposal that Mark put together will have probably at least three people, maybe four people as co-conveners. And then what happens is that the AGU decides which proposals are going to be accepted. Sometimes they combine proposals if the topics seem really close. Like if we were to come up with a topic and somebody else were to submit a proposal along the same lines, they might ask us to combine. But in any case, then when they open the registration and the ability to submit abstracts, these descriptions are out there on the AGU website, and people identify the sessions that are and you can look at the list of education and outreach sessions that are there, and people submit abstracts. And then the other piece is that the convening group can do some inviting some talks. And you usually only, I forget if there's an actual limit, but usually you don't do more than three or four. And it doesn't imply any funding or waiving of fees or anything, but it does have implications for how many abstracts you can be first author on if you're invited. And then the people submit abstracts, and this is a huge meeting. So last year there were 19,000 people at the AGU meeting.
Wow.
So it's huge. Then the conveners get all of the abstracts, and they make decisions about which are the oral sessions, which are the poster sessions, or if there's any abstracts that they feel are inappropriate for the session, should be in another session, or just outright rejected. But that doesn't happen often, at least from my perspective. I think that if you're allotted, so based on the number of abstracts that get submitted to your section, you're allotted a certain number of oral spots. And so last year for the climate literacy, we had two oral sessions. I think each had eight talks in it. Each talk is 15 minutes. And then we had probably more than that number, so probably on the order of 25 posters. So we actually had three sessions during the course of the AGU meeting. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of in a nutshell. And if people have questions, I'm happy to answer them. But what I'd like the discussion to be now is around the kind of topics that we think that might be useful to have at the AGU meeting, thinking in terms of this is a science organization, and there also is the caveat that while we're doing really well to have education sessions, it's relatively new that there are education sessions. Often the scientists don't come to the education sessions. We're often talking to our own community, where it would be good to be able to talk to the broader scientific community. So that's just, and that's also true at GSA, as Don can probably attest to. So the question is, and Lynn Chambers actually sent an email back. I guess she couldn't be on the call, but they're interested in the tri-agency committee, the tri-agency meaning NOAA, NASA, and NSF, thought it would be a good idea to have a set of sessions at the AGU meeting around climate literacy and climate education, climate outreach. So the question was, what kind of sessions do we think might be useful, and then potentially identify people who would be the conveners of that session? And you could have an idea now and not be able to be a convener, or you can suggest somebody, but we have some time to find people. If you just have a good idea but you couldn't be a convener, please voice your idea anyway. So are there any thoughts about the kinds of sessions that we might have?
Tamara, this is Karen, and I've been through this sort of a challenge with the Ecological Society of America for many years now, with, as you described, the scientists not interested. And the way we eventually bridged that gap in ESA is to focus, instead of on K-12, to focus on higher ed education and community adult education, which the scientists were more interested in. And at this point, there's a huge community in ESA that both proposes and comes to the education sessions. So I just tossed that out there as a way that that education became a robust part of the ESA conferences.
Would you think that a session that was focused exclusively on higher education would be well received, or you think this more of a combination of higher ed and adult ed?
I don't know, because I don't know the groups that you're specifically talking about now. I just know that the strategy of both adult audiences and college-age audiences worked at ESA.
Okay, because one of the things that Lynn suggested was to organize potential sessions around target audiences or cross-disciplinary connections. Cross-disciplinary connections sounds intriguing to me, but thinking of particular ways of phrasing it so that it's broadly appealing is...
Well, and as most university people know, it's really fraught with campus problems, especially in declining budgets. Well, every department's being cut, and you know, we have to circle the wagons and take care of our own, and in this economic climate.
Yeah.
I know some things that were talked about on the tri-agency telecon yesterday were things like social ramifications of climate change and economical. Now I've lost my word. But some of the other not so scientific things, and maybe having one session devoted to that. So that's another idea.
Yeah, actually, a long time ago, I had a social scientist come to the AGU meeting to talk about issues in climate change. Like I said, it was a really long time ago, the 1990s. And it was really interesting. If we could put together a session where we have some invited speakers, one about economic impacts, one about psychology, and the social ramifications. I mean, it's a kind of combine those into one session, where the invited speakers kind of touch on these various areas. That would be interesting to me. Now, the question is, would it be interesting to AGU?
Right.
Geophysical. Yes.
Well, we'll have to think about that. We have tried to have either Tony Leiserowitz or Ed Mabach come to the AGU meeting, and Ed's actually interested. We've always just asked him too late for him to come at the, you know, he always has a conflict. So, but if we think about it early enough, I do know I asked him last year, if we asked him earlier, would he be interested? Because the other problem is they do have to pay their own way and the registration and so forth. So,
well, Tamara, if Ed was sort of the centerpiece of a session, what would be the rest of it? I guess I'm just wondering whether you kind of can say, well, this is sort of Ed's cut on this. What are the other aspects of that?
Well, there's two things that Ed and Tony can talk to. They did two different pieces, and one of the things that would be really interesting maybe for the scientific community is not the original Six Americas reports, which is people's perspectives and belief in global warming, but in their actual understanding of the science.
Okay.
Their science knowledge, and that might be something that would be interesting, and it goes back to Candace's proposal in that having scientists understand what society really does understand would be
right.
interesting.
Yeah.
It would. It's almost maybe they could put together a presentation for both conferences if that's possible.
Well, yeah, they're what, a couple months apart.
Yeah. But not much.
Just about 2 months.
It's February.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm sort of identifying the ideas here. Is one is to focus on target audiences like of higher education, and another on community and adult education, and another where we look at the more social, economic, and psychological aspects of climate change, and we really have to think about how to pose that a little bit more concretely, and then a session on people's understanding of climate change. But I think that I'm with you, Scott, and what would a session be in which that would be a part of?
Yeah.
Because these aren't hour-long talks. These are 15-minute talks in a session which would have somewhere between 6 and 8 speakers.
I'm really quite intrigued with this notion of focusing on, you know, what does the general public understand?
Mm-hmm.
If we can frame that in a way that would be interesting to some scientists, at least, in terms of their outreach. So it's not just them guessing, well, what do I need to teach, or, you know, what kind of presentations do I do? It really is saying, okay, this is what the surveys show. Here's where we're failing in some ways, and it's quite frankly, this is where we need help from scientists.
Right.
Even in developing new materials, especially for these other audiences that we're talking about, not the K-12, the informal, I presume, also, but general public and higher ed. So,
yeah.
There's a germ there.
Yeah. Okay, now, I think that we have some good ideas here, and we need to sort of talk through them a little bit more fully, but I just wanted to get a sense here of the people on the phone. I generally always go to the December AGU meeting. How many other people are on the phone would be interested in going to the AGU meeting?
Certainly, I plan on going. This is Scott.
Okay.
Fairly easy for me.
I'll also plan on going. This is Anigold.
Okay.
Man, and I never know, but we sent somebody. Well, I went 2 years ago. We didn't send anybody this past year.
Okay. Well, the question right now is are any of you who said that are going would be interested in being a co-convener on one of these? And you don't have to commit to anyone in particular right now, but just the general issue of.
I think in general, yes.
Yeah, in general, okay. Yes.
In general, okay.
Not sure, but they're all kind of intriguing.
And Barbara, you can't commit?
Well, I'm not a climate scientist, so I'm not sure I'm qualified to do something like that. If it's just to be a moderator to keep calm on the people at a session, I'd be happy to do that, and I think they would be willing to send me.
Okay, I mean, like I said, basically the duties are to help identify the invited speakers and talk to invite them, and then to go through the abstracts and decide on which ones are talks, which ones are posters, and then put them in order. That's kind of, and then to moderate the oral sessions, and usually that's shared. It depends on how many sessions you actually, oral sessions you have, and there's somebody has to officially chair the poster session too. Well, we'll put that down to Mamie here for you,
maybe,
Barbara.
Because it's something that maybe if Lynn wasn't planning on going, that she could work through the abstracts with me. And
yeah, okay. Well, I mean, maybe Lynn would be interested in being
Lynn
a co-convener.
Lynn might.
What?
I'll put that bug in her ear.
Okay. Since she sent me the email, I mean, she's the one who sort of thought it would be a good idea to have this discussion.
Yeah.
All right, so let's why don't we go back to the social ramifications and sort of just talk through that a little bit more, like what other kinds of topics would be interesting to include in such a session? I have the social ramifications, economical, psychological.
Policy, would that fit in there?
Policy.
Sure.
Can you rattle through that list one more time?
I have social ramifications, economical, psychological, policy.
How about pedagogical? Makes sense.
I think this session we're talking not so much about education as more the broader impacts.
Okay. No. On public. And policy is probably the way that you get at how do we try to address that. What are the policy implications of the social and psychological?
Mm-hmm. We'll have to come up with a good name for this.
and something that really, I think we're trying to be rigorous about this, and it would be really nice. You know, I think of who do we have speak from the Psychological Association? Was it Janet?
Janet Swim.
Yeah.
Yeah. She would be the one person that I would want to invite to give that talk, or at least talk to her about who to invite if she couldn't do it.
And I'm sure we can sort of think of some of the other folks in the other areas, but I think it'd be very interesting to have folks who do not normally go to AGU and to in some ways challenge them to ask, the question that from your discipline, what do you need to know from DO scientists?
Mm-hmm.
And present
that.
Yeah. Because many of these folks, I mean, Janet's an example, who is very deeply involved in even the geoscience of all of this because it becomes an important aspect of her research and her committee in terms of the psychological impacts.
Mm-hmm. Now that could even be potentially not exactly the title, but it could be something along those lines for the title, because the title is not to be enticing to the speakers. We invite the speakers, but to the AGU members who would be coming and submitting abstracts.
Yeah.
And we would invite some speakers. And then the other thing that people do is once you've finished inviting speakers, you can send out emails asking people to contribute talks. And you could sort of target particular groups if you wanted to. If we could identify specific ones that we thought would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Intriguing.
I'm kind of jumping to a different one of the different ideas, which was community and adult education. Do you think informal education fits into that category, or would it be something separate?
Informal.
I would say that it certainly could.
And
what?
It's a component.
I think it's a component too.
Yeah.
And for higher ed, the idea around higher ed, are people thinking that is solely to focus on higher education in science or higher ed just college level in general?
Well, I think the idea of introducing, and I can't remember who mentioned it, but the idea is that, I think it was from Karen actually, that the folks who would be interested would be those who would be teaching at the undergrad and general public rather than the K-12. And since this is a geoscience meeting, it strikes me it would be more focused on the science side of undergrad education. But
Karen, are you still on the phone?
I am.
So at the Ecological Society of America, is the focus on higher education in science or higher education in general?
No, it's on ecology courses that are offered through science departments.
Okay.
Or either science majors or non-majors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's good.
So science majors or non-majors.
Right.
And certainly, AGU, there's folks who are both in, certainly working with major students and non-major students in community colleges and that. So it's not just exclusively higher ed. So that would work.
And to the degree that resources, for instance, for secondary schools are appropriate for those audiences, you know, they might be interested in learning about those resources. I mean, I can see them, for instance, interested in the CD that we had earlier this month on a conference call as a teaching resource.
From Bird Polar.
What do you mean, for the higher education group?
Yeah. Don't you think some higher ed?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I see crossover all the time. In fact, a lot of the curriculum materials that we're developing for the high school capstone level we already have projects where they're integrating into climate change education courses at the college level. Mostly for non-majors, but it doesn't have to exclusively be that. It can be introductory level for anybody.
Yeah.
Good.
All right, well, I think we have five pretty good ideas here, including Mark's session. I think what might be useful, because I don't think we've really consolidated what titles might be, but I can type this up and share it with everybody, maybe through a discussion thread, and see if we can refine this and get some others who are interested in participating.
I think that's great. Exactly what we should be doing.
Okay, so are there any other things that people would like to discuss?
When's the deadline for the AAAS again?
She said April 26th, is that what you said?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, AAAS one is April 26th, and I know it's April 20th for these AGU sessions, so I'll try to get something out in the next day or so. And Candace, you should start that discussion thread right away also, so that if people have ideas on the call that they want to put in there, that they can right away.
Right.
While they're still thinking about it.
If folks are interested in NSTA, I pretty much always go, so I could do something there, but the turnaround is pretty fast. It's like 2 weeks from now I have to look for them.
Yeah.
To do that soon.
Yeah, well.
John, when do you find that information that'd be useful to send around? I mean, it's certainly an enormous venue for us.
I will. I'll do that right this instant, in fact.
I don't know that date. It sounds like it'll be in the next week.
Okay. And I'll put I'll put down basically as future topics of discussion this idea about developing a coordinated strategy for dealing with meetings and the idea about integrating Climate Literacy Network and CLEAN. And I know that in the next couple of weeks we have some presentations scheduled, so it'll be a few weeks, but at least it'll be there, we won't forget.
Exactly.
April 15th is the deadline for NSTA
April 15th. We have a whole month. Usually NSTA is at the very end of March, beginning of April, so it's usually 2 weeks. But I know that the April 15th is the... when they like to.
Good. So we can look at all three.
And it's in Indianapolis next year.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, very good.
Yeah. Very good indeed.
Well, thanks a lot, everybody. We have, like I said, we have a speaker next week, and I can pull up kind of quickly here who that is. I think Charles Kazlik from the Bioscience EdNet. Ben, it's an NSDL pathway project, so we'll be hearing about the Biological Sciences Pathway Project next week.
Great.
Okay?
Good.
Very
all
good.
Right.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.